the bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Welcome to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf, your source for total wealth management. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of Roe, his guests, and callers. Now let's begin the show. Here's your host, Roe Diefendorf.
Thank you for joining me on Three-Dimensional Wealth. I'm your host, Roe Diefendorf, and today I'm here with Jolene Godfrey, and she is the CEO of Independent Means, and she is one of the world's leading experts on children, families, and money. She's an author, and she's written Raising Financially Fit Kids. I have that book in my hands, but she's also written No More Frogs to Kiss, 99 Ways to Give Economic Power to Girls. And she's been the subject of a popular Harvard Business School case. She's been featured on the Today Show, Oprah, the CBS Morning News, as well as in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Fortune, Business Week, and now Business Voice America. So I want to thank you, Jolene, for joining me today.
My pleasure, Roy. Thank you.
Well, I know this started back for you around 1992, when I think you founded your company.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a small project. I think you called it an income of her own. But there must have been something that happened before that that got you started on this path. So maybe you can give us some of the background.
Well, briefly, I had sold my first company and had been invited by Inc. magazine to do a series of interviews with women who own businesses, and that was sort of in the early stage of women who were starting businesses in a big way. And so I spent about a year doing those interviews and writing them up, and when I finished, I had these transcripts that showed clearly to me that had any of those adult women had talked about money when they were children with anybody, mm-hmm. their lives and their businesses would have been very different, which led me immediately to think where the action needed to be was with financial education and children. And I think before that first book, Our Wildest Dreams, ever hit the bookshelves, I was really going down that path of how do we engage children in their own economic development.
Now, it's interesting because you talk about, you have the phrase financial literacy,
mm-hmm.
but you also go on to say it's more than just about money. I mean, that's our show, Three-Dimensional Wealth. You know, it's personal wealth, financial wealth, and social wealth.
Yep.
But what's the distinction that you make?
Well, what I say is it's not really just about the money. It's about raising great kids. It just happens that kids who have really good financial habits and skills turn out to have the kinds of inner structure that are equivalent with great kids. You know, they understand responsibility. They understand discipline. They are conscious of the values you need to take care of yourself and be generous with others. And so there is this lovely way of using financial education as a vehicle for raising great kids.
The book that you've written, Raising Financially Fit Kids, I read it. I thought it was spectacular.
Thank you.
But who was it written for? I mean, is this for the ultra-wealthy? Is this for middle America? Is this would it be a global book? I mean, is this a worldwide phenomenon? What did you have
question.
In mind?
Well, it's a very curious question because, in fact, every parent, universally, wherever they are on the planet, really wants their kid to become financially competent. So in that way, it was written for truly a universal audience. That said, the families I work with tend to be very intentional about this issue. They may have set up trust funds for their kids, you know, and it doesn't need to be a big one. It can be as small as I've set aside college funds for the kids,
mm-hmm.
and I want them to use it responsibly. So in many ways, the book is aimed at the intentional parent, the one who really is thoughtful about how do we help our kids be responsible, either about small trust funds or big trust funds or just the earnings they're going to make.
So then the question really is this for the kids or is this for the parent that you're doing?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We, for many years, I worked very directly with kids. We didn't do much work with parents. We were kind of operating under the radar. We ran summer camps and workshops for kids, and we learned a lot about how to engage children in their own economic development. I should add, we screwed up a lot in every conceivable way, which helped us learn. But by the time I was writing Raising Financially Fit Kids, I was ready to share what we had learned in that direct work with parents and grandparents. And, you know, it's very interesting. I do want to add that oftentimes when I do a talk, I find that I have a lot of single people in the audience, and I will say to them, so what are you doing here? And happily, many, many more aunts and uncles are really seeing themselves as important mentors in that family circle when it comes to next generation.
I've challenged a number of our single clients to do exactly the same thing. I said, anyway, you know, here's the legacy you can leave.
Right.
And I said, you know, help your nephews and nieces understand what it means to be philanthropic, you know. Be involved and help them give away and do something that for others.
Exactly.
You talk about 10 basic money skills. Let me just read them briefly as an outline. This is in the introduction of your book. You talk about, you know, how to save, how to keep track of money, how to get paid what you're worth, how to spend wisely, how to talk about money, how to live a budget, how to invest, how to exercise the entrepreneurial spirit, how to handle credit, and how to use money to change the world. I like those. Now, as you played these out, we found that, or I think they came in sort of these developmental stages.
Mm-hmm.
So you wanted to teach about these 10 things, but then it's what I think you called your life money map?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Let me begin by saying one of the things we've done is really name those years between 5 and 18 as the financial apprenticeship stage of life.
Mm-hmm.
And what we know is, like learning a language or learning to walk or anything else, you learn it over time as you get more sophisticated, and the same is true with money. So I often will say to my clients, you know, I don't care if your kids can calculate compound interest when they're 9, but I want them to be able to spell it. Because I know if you can spell the phrase compound interest when you're 9, you'll have awareness of it when you're 11. And by the time you're 13, you'll be calculating. And by the time you're 15 or 16, you'll be using it to your advantage. And so that's what we mean by the developmental stages. It's learning those skills in an incremental, iterative way over time so that by the time you're 18, with any luck, you will have mastered the skills. I think somehow we have given the message that if you go to a weekend class or you sit down with a book or you take a half hour, you can figure out everything there is to know about money. And, of course, we would no more expect a child to learn everything they know about math in a half hour than we would expect them to master tennis in a day.
Mm.
And so really what we're saying is, you know, give them time, use our drip, drip, drip iterative method, and over time you'll have a child who has mastered the 10 money skills.
You know, what I've found in my experience, that if you miss these sort of developmental periods of, you know, savings and thrift in younger ages, or as they get a little older where you have this sort of, you know, philanthropic time period, you know, when maybe in their teens and you start to have them think about being outwardly focused. If you miss those, right?
Right.
Then by the time, instead of being 5 and 6, they're now 25 and 26.
Yeah.
They're not putting money in their 401k plan. You know, they haven't learned those patterns. And by the time they're not 16 and 17, but they're 56 and 57, you know, my phrase is they've got deep pockets and short arms. And, you know, they're not reaching in to give anything away. And so it goes back to those years that, you know, part of the parenting process, I think, is to help understand, you know, that those principles of patterns of the savings and thrift are important.
Yep.
And also the idea of, you know, philanthropy, and that you really become more of a person by giving away.
That's exactly right. And to your point, what we see is those kids who are playing economic catch-up through their entire lives because they missed it early on. Now, a point though I do want to make is that we get a lot of adults who, you know, as they're watching what we do with kids, they come to us and they say, oh, I missed this. How do I get this? You know, I want to be in one of those kids programs. And what we say is, look, it's no different from learning a language. If you as an adult decide you want to master French, you'll go to an intensive immersion language class. And so I'm always quick to say to adults, it's never too late. It's just that you have to be a little more aggressive, a little more intensive, and a little more purposeful. But everybody can do this.
And the problem is it doesn't come quite as easy when you're older.
That's true.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break, but we're going to be back with more of Three Dimensional Wealth, so stay tuned.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
Investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com. Or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roe Diefendorf.
I'm here with Jolene Godfrey, and we're discussing her book, Raising Financially Fit Kids. And I want to talk about the money monsters. Mm. You've talked about kids being four kinds of money monsters. Tell us about them.
Well, the money monsters, of course, are what parents and grandparents are up against when they're trying to raise financially fit kids. And that includes things like the massive media that children are subjected to every day. And everybody says to me, well, wasn't it always this way? And the answer is, of course, yeah. I mean, back in the early 1900s, people were targeting kids. What's different today is the power of it and the fact that it is 24/7 in 100 different ways at once. So when we talk about kids multitasking, what we also mean is that they're getting messages to consume and spend constantly in multiple ways. And so that's one of the big monsters that families are up against. I often say to families, look, kids don't get their financial values from you. You're their last shot because they're going to get it from the rest of the world and the messages coming at them, and that's really not what you want. So that's really one of the big ones. Another one, interestingly, I think, is this whole issue of what it means in terms of privacy in the world. You know, it used to be that there were things, in fact, most of us grew up with the notion that the things you did not talk about. And so now when families say, well, when should I tell my kids about money, what I say to them is, look, it's too late. Your job is to preempt your kids because mm-hmm. through Google and Facebook, these kids are Googling you. And I have lots of stories about families who discover that their kids, in fact, have gathered information about them that they didn't mean to let out. But, you know, through Nexus and Lexus and Google and all the other search engines, family information is out there, and this next generation feels very differently about privacy than we did. So, again, it means if families aren't proactive about sharing information and expectations and values, kids will put together these strange pictures or these amalgams of fantasies about what the financial lives of their family are. So that's the second one, this whole issue of how the world is coming at kids through information that dilutes family privacy. Another one is the flat world phenomenon that I talk about. You know, again, these kids are not competing just with the children in the seat next to them or in the school down the road. They're competing with children in Singapore and in Shanghai. And so today's parent has a much bigger job of really understanding that they are preparing global citizens, not just kids who are growing up in the United States. And, you know, you see that being played out in kids in the extent to which they are emailing with kids all around the country and all around the world. And so they have an awareness of the international phenomenon, but sometimes the parents are kind of catching up because it's almost too hard to believe, like living on another planet almost. So these are three of the big things that, families struggle with. How do we as a family group compete with what is happening to our children independently out there? I was recently at a school in Honolulu, Punahou School, and one of the moms in the group said, well, what do you think is the most serious poison our kids are infected with today that interferes with financial education? And I remember thinking about it for just a moment and thought, you know, it really isn't anything external. What is really most difficult is that children don't have the internal pieces of information that they so need. So kids are getting their identification from what I wear, what I drive, what my logos are, when what they need is a sense of rootedness and identity that comes from knowing who they are in the context of family. So a very long-winded way to say there are some very serious money monsters out there, but there's also an antidote for it.
Aha. Uh-huh. And what's the antidote?
The antidote is the values. If you as a family can, I mean, we take for granted we have to do mission statements and strategies for businesses, but we don't really think about that in applied to our own families. And what I'm saying to families now is, look, often you get in these power and control struggles with kids. You know, can I have it? Can I not? Can I do this? Can I don't? I have to. If you as a family have a mission statement so that you can move that power and struggle and control struggle to, okay, what is our mission as a family? Who are we? What's important to us? What are our values? What are our priorities? You can move the conversation with kids from that horrific struggle every family has, the human drama, to something slightly higher plane. And families who do that see very quickly that kids can get on board and help fulfill the family mission rather than rebel against it all the time. So values, value, values is what we come back to.
It's interesting because in what we're doing at Three Dimensional Wealth, that's exactly it. When we talk about sort of the, you know, the intangible wealth, right? You get your tangible, you put dollar signs around it, but the intangible, your values, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, how do you do that? And so that's exactly what we're doing, helping families put together family legacy manuscripts.
Yeah.
Articulate that, bring it together. And the thing that I've found is that you can get kids at a young age to be involved.
Yeah,
that was one of the
it.
Things I had, you know, as I went through. And now this next month I start my 39th year. Okay, so, you know, in the early years, I was always dealing with, you know, the father or the mother or the older generation. And we just never took the time because I was on to the next family.
Right.
And we never took the time to really bring in the kids. And what I found now is that the family is our client, not the individual or not the parents. And once we had that feeling that kids at a younger age could be involved, and I find this with our own family. And we've come back. We've done some mission work together.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in Africa. We're in the trenches, you know, we're spending our personal time, mm-hmm. our vacation time, you know, working,
right.
and our financial money to be there, and we're doing something with the outlook focus socially, and we're sort of syncing all these, and we're doing it together, and we came back this past year, And we said, you know, what are we going to do? What is this? What is our family going to be about? And mm-hmm. what do we want to make a difference in? And, you know, and is it getting the next something for us? And the kids said, no, we think we can make a difference in this village, the Kalikiliki village in Lusaka, Zambia.
Yep.
And how are we going to do that? And so we worked on our philanthropic mission statement and set up really our sort of our core values. And they said, that's what we want to do. Let's press on. And so our kids are involved. You know, now the youngest started at 17 when she was involved. But I see them, you know, taking hold of this and taking ownership of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's not, you know, my values.
Right.
And my project and my thing, it's ours. And when I'm gone,
yep.
it'll be theirs to pass on. And
exactly.
So, yeah, no, I understand that. I can see it firsthand.
Yep. No, it's really core work that if you're serious about managing your finances, then you will manage your values. That's really the connection.
Well, some of the things that I've found is that you've got to change people's paradigms because,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you see them initially, all they're interested is, you know, what's the market doing? Am I in the right place? You know, how do I make more money?
Yeah.
And I'm going, you know what? I have found people who are financially wealthy and personally bankrupt, and that
right.
is not my mission to help them create more financial wealth and be way out of sync.
Yep, no,
and,
I totally
and so you,
agree.
You come at it a whole different approach, and when you do that, you know, then you say, okay, how can we work and start the kids at an early time? And
that's
so, again, as I'm reading through your book, I thought, okay, some of these things I missed along the way, but I've got grandchildren coming up in another month, so
exactly.
I get another shot at it.
Well, and I have to say some of the best work we see is the mentoring that happens with grandparents, because
mm-hmm.
somehow I think it's easier for grandparents to take their grandchildren seriously than it is for parents to take their children seriously. And kids know when they're taken seriously, and they will respond to it. It's remarkable.
You talked about some different money styles of a hoarder and a spendthrift and a giver. How does that play, and where do you use that?
You know, it's really interesting. I think that many families will say quickly, oh, well, I've got a kid who can't keep a dollar in his pocket more than 20 minutes, and the other child, you know, hides all of his money under the bed and won't let go of anything. And over what you see is that every family struggles with these multiple styles. And so when you try to put an allowance in place, most parents, for the sake of efficiency, will try to do one allowance that suits every kid, when the fact is every kid is different. So early on, we began to observe these different styles in children, and initially I would put, I think it's seven different styles you
mm-hmm.
notice in my book, and I would put them up on a board, and I'd say to the kids, okay, so which are you? What was always interesting is that they would immediately identify who they are.
They knew,
and it's not that any one of us are necessarily dominant in any one style. We may have several, but the kid who is really powerfully a giver and is giving not just out of generosity but because they're seeking approval or want to keep everything calm without conflict, or the child who is a constant hustler and has no room for generosity. When you see those dominant patterns emerge, what you understand is that now where we have to focus is on on allowing those kids to kind of deal with their dominant issues. And so
are you saying that it comes with the package? I mean, it's built into the DNA, and then it comes out, and then we have to figure out how to
exactly
adapt to each kid?
Exactly. And the good news is that there's a way to do that. You know, genes are not destiny, and kids are not finished off by the nature of whatever their style is. So now what we know is if a child does have a giving constitution, if you will, you can help them develop their entrepreneurial spirit. You can help them think about what it means to hoard a little money occasionally. You can help them figure out balance. That's the key thing. Now, there is a style I mentioned that I am always particularly on the alert for, and most parents should be, and that is the oblivious child. And the oblivious child is worrisome because that's the kid who isn't really stupid about money is they choose to check out, that it is a strategy, that they know as soon as they are held accountable, as soon as they check in, they will have responsibility. And the oblivious child takes way more energy than other kids because they know generally they can hold out longer than you can. So that's the kid I spend a lot of time on.
Well, good. We're going to be taking a break here, but we're going to be back one more time. So stay tuned with more of Three Dimensional Wealth. Thank you.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA. Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management, financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
We now return to Three Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf. Direct your questions and comments to www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now the host of Three Dimensional Wealth, Roy Diefendorf.
Welcome back. My guest for today is Jolene Gottfried. And we're, again, looking at her book, and it's titled Raising Financially Fit Kids. Well, one of the things you talk about is financial apprenticeship. And there's a certain age, you have it targeted between the ages of 5 and 8. And tell us how that applies, because I think those are critical ages.
That is a critical age. And the important thing to say about the time between 5 and 8 is I don't expect children then to be managing full budgets and calculating, you know, doing income statements. But those are the years in which you can begin to build a vocabulary, which you can begin to expose them to concepts and ideas that they will then expand on and become more sophisticated about when they're 9 to 12. So even to begin to use the term philanthropy, for example, so that they understand what that means later, or to equate sharing with charitable work and philanthropic work. Those 5 to 8 years are the times when your kids begin to understand who they are in the context of the family. So if the family is making choices, you know, I often get this crazy question from families saying, so look, I've got this big sailboat. Are you telling me I shouldn't have a big sailboat and nice houses if I want to raise good kids? And I'm always saying, no, actually that's not what I'm saying. It's not about what you have. It's about how you integrate your kids into the messages you're giving them. So do you have a big house so you can impress the neighbors, or do you have a big house so you can entertain the family and use it as a gathering place for the children?
Mm-hmm.
And when they understand the difference, this is not about who I am externally, but who we are as a family internally, it all makes more sense.
I like that.
And so that's really what we're trying to do in those early years, help the world make sense for kids.
Allowance. Now, there's a lot of confusion about it. What is it? What is it not, from your experience?
Well, here's my mantra, and I feel pretty strongly about this, and you'll see in the book, I think, that I give families this mantra. An allowance is not a salary. It is not an entitlement. It is simply a tool for practicing money skills. And what happens is too many families try to use the allowance as an incentive, that is, to get your chores done or to get your homework done, brush your teeth, as opposed to, and of course what they discover immediately is that they are living with the world's finest little negotiator,
mm-hmm.
because every kid can figure out the rules around doing whatever the incentive is. And one of the reasons that they can get around this so often is the big downfall of allowances is the windfall. Most kids get that they can use their birthday money, or they can get money from grandma or wherever and not have to pay attention to that allowance. There's no incentive to really live within their means because there's always this outplay. So when I create allowance plans with families, there's also always an income statement that goes with it. And one line is the allowance. One line is projections from birthdays. Another line is from projected windfalls. And then this is for very young kids too, because we see the kids are so savvy very early on about outsmarting their parents, that unless you really create a comprehensive vision around what your income outgo statement is, then the kids are going to diminish the power of the allowance.
I don't know if you've ever, I'm sure you've seen it. It was the Bill Cosby sort of show. I don't know who he's giving the allowance to, but it was all I can remember is saying regular people.
And
he gives the allowance. And he said, "Well, now we have rent, and then we have food, and we have." And then she's going, "Well, wait, what is it?" He said, "Hey, this is regular people."
Yep.
And you know, my kids are now off on their own. They've got to pay their rent in Boston,
yep.
and they're doing these things. And, "Dad, I'm out of money." I said, "Yeah, regular people."
Well, you know, there is a very important point to this, and that is one of the big issues we're seeing, and this is with even very affluent families, is that subsidy of adult children is becoming an increasing problem in this country.
Mm.
And that is for families who don't know how to teach their kids independence. And so what they do is they keep on supporting by, you know, it may start with paying the down payment of the house and some of the monthly payment and maybe the car. And then it moves to, well, I'm going to help them out with a private school for kids. And the difficulty is then the grandkids begin to see that, well, you know, if I just look to my grandparents or my parents or somebody else, I don't have to do this. So it's part of what infuses the passing on of dependence. So for me, allowances really are all about that early development of independence so that you don't have subsidy of adult children later in life.
Mm-hmm. You talk about ages 9 to 12 for developing or encouraging passions. Mm-hmm. How do you do this?
Well, you know, the first time a child says to mom or dad, "I want to do the lemonade stand," and it seems to be a classic rite of passage for kids, most families will get all excited, and the response is, "Isn't that cute?" And what I say to families is, no, that's not cute. That's a kid expressing an interest. So you want to jump on the interest and say to them, "Great, let's do the business plan." And what you immediately do then is take them seriously and give them some skills in that teachable moment. I watch over and over as families say, "Yeah, let's do the lemonade stand," and then they take care of everything, and the kid is standing out there at the side of the road accepting $5 donations from clients, from customers, and it doesn't have any meaning. So really listening to children and finding those moments where they express an interest in something and then using it to make the economic lesson is so important.
I think about a story. This was my mini bike story. I must have been around that 12-year-old age.
Mm-hmm.
And I say to my dad, I said, "Listen, Dad, I want a mini bike. Will you buy me a mini bike?" He goes, "No, I'm not going to buy a mini bike." I said, "Well, wait a second. Harry has a mini bike. Donnie has a mini bike. Why don't you buy me a mini?" He says, "If you want one, why don't you buy it yourself?" I said, "Well, I don't have any money." So he said, "I'll tell you what I'll do." He says, "I'll be your partner." He says, "You earn half, and I'll put up half." I said, "Well, what am I going to do?" So we make a business. He sits down. He says, "All right, what can you do?" I said, "Well, I can cut lawns. Okay, cut lawns. I can rake leaves. Okay, rake leaves. Wash cars. Okay. He said, well, let's see. Who can you do that for? Well, I said, I could do it for Grandma. Okay, Grandma, I make my list. He said, well, how much can you get? I said, well, I get $1 for washing the car, and I go on down. He says, all right, now let's see what we have. He adds it up. Adds up to half a mini bike.
Oh, my God.
I want to tell you, this is a Sunday night. 6 o'clock the next morning, I am out. And by Saturday, the next week, I have the quasi-stellar, top-of-the-line mini bike. And my partner has to put up half the dough because I worked 18 hours a day. But, you know, he kind of ignited the passion, if you
will.
That's
remarkable.
You know, and I think back at that and I go, you know, and he could have easily given me the money.
Right.
But after that, I said, okay, I know how this works.
Exactly, exactly. That is so great. Great story. I'm going to pass that one along.
Mini bike story. What about when you get to the point when you're like 13, 14, 15, trying to take on some financial responsibility, breaking away is the term you use.
You know, this is a very key time because it's the time when kids want to begin to shut out families occasionally because they do want to be independent, and they're also getting the most input from their peers. And they want to, strange time, because they want to both fit in and be like everybody else, but they want to be different at the same time. It is a time when children are most prone to bully their families. And I say that because I watch parents really stretch very far to be accommodating of kids. At that those years, though, it's the most important time to help stress the importance of equating privilege and responsibility, of pulling together. If you want to be independent, then you need to master these skills. And in some instances, I think it's much easier to help kids go into their adolescent and teenage years if you're constantly making that connect between privilege and responsibility. So if you want to be independent, then you have to demonstrate your proficiency with money. And so the better you are at managing your allowance, the bigger the allowance is going to be. Those are the years when we really suggest getting pretty aggressive about allowance. I remember having this young woman who worked for me, and she told a story of her mother was frustrated. She was 13 years old. Her mother was frustrated. She was, for some reason, constantly losing socks. And so she decided that she'd put her on an allowance that would give her responsibility for clothes and haircuts. And I remember Brooke saying, you know, for the first few weeks, she really was so unhappy. And she said, I cried. I was depressed because I thought I had really done something wrong to make my mother that angry. And then she realized she was the only kid in class who had responsibility for money in that way. She went on to pay her own college tuition. And I tell this story because I think that's exactly what happens when you give kids responsibility. They will rise to the task. But more and more, I see parents pulling away from it and not giving children opportunity to be independent when it comes to managing their money. Now, I do want to add that I am not for a moment suggesting you put $500 a month in cash in the hands of any child. But there is a difference between doling out cash and giving them responsibility for managing a budget.
There's a point in time, and you say right after that, 16, 17, 18, now you call it standing tall. I mean, what's the goal of this stage? Is that
standing tall is the moment when you say, you know, you're getting ready to leave the house to go to college or whatever, and now it's time to really master these skills. And if you've checked out and really haven't done what you could have done when you were 9 and 10, it's time to get really intensive about this. And this is really a turning point because by the time a child is 18, families really do lose their leverage in many ways. So it could be a time of some conflict in families, but I think when you bring them into that process you were talking about earlier of, okay, what is our mission as a family? What are our learning goals here? How are we going to do this? It needs to be as intentional as any project you would put in place and work. And if you do that, then what you have is an opportunity to really help them make that leap from the teenagers into young adulthood. And that's the bridge you're trying. By the time they're off to college, they need to be in the land of young adulthood.
Well, all right. That was great. We're going to take one more break. And then we're going to be back with more of Jolene Godfrey and Three Dimensional Wealth. Stay tuned.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
Investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com. Or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roe Diefendorf.
We're back, and I've got Jolene Godfrey, who is the CEO of Independent Means, and really what I say is one of the world's leading experts on children, family, and money. We've been talking about her book, Raising Financially Fit Kids. And in this last piece, just a couple things I want to talk about. One is the role of mentors. The second thing is philanthropy. When does that come in and in what form? And then the third thing is what I want to talk about is the boomerang generation and what can we do to help the parents in this situation. So maybe talk about mentors first.
Well, mentors, every single person in the family, and I think we chatted about this earlier, doesn't matter if you have kids of your own, if you are a cousin, a sibling, an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent, your opportunity is really to help bring that next generation along by sharing information about your financial values, whatever skills you have. What you're trying to do is pass on legacy in terms of real financial values, and better to come from family members, frankly, than to come from the external world of the media and the stars, if you will. So for us, we really include mentors in our planning in a very specific way. So we often will say to a family, let us help set up a mentoring plan for your family so that everybody in the family is connected to somebody. And at least once a quarter or once a month or once a week, whatever we can work out, there is some activity going on that passes information on. Now, we used to get that when extended families lived closer and were not so geographically dispersed, children would pick up things from their aunts and uncles and grandparents. Because that's not so easy these days, we have to be much more intentional about it.
You know, one of the things we have is we've got a grandfather and set up a foundation, but the foundation is set up really for the grandchildren. That's just his link. And so he's kind of the hub, and the grandchildren are part of this,
yeah.
And they communicate. And it's all web-driven, so they can get online. They have granting authority, and this is his way to leave a legacy about, making a difference in the world.
Right.
And this is, he's the mentor.
Yeah.
And he's got his link to his grandchildren who are around the country.
Right.
And I said, okay, here's what I think we should do. And he went to it.
That makes sense. That's good.
How about philanthropy? What do you say to start putting that into practice?
Well, you know, for kids, it's all about them most of the time. And what's great about incorporating philanthropy into financial education is that it may be the tool you have to help kids understand that it's really not just about them. It is it's a vehicle to get them out of self-absorption. So philanthropy is that way to kind of give them a chance to extend beyond themselves, to make something matter beyond themselves. You know, one of my 10 basic money skills is using money to change the world, and I think that's one of the key messages, that money is not just about itself. It really is a vehicle for making a difference in a bigger way.
All right. Tell us about the boomerang generation, kids at home. There's a chapter, it's entitled, I think, Yikes, My Kids Won't Leave Home. Towards the end of the book, I thought it was spectacular. What do we do? I mean, I've got a lot of clients who are in exactly this predicament.
Oh, we see it. Well, you know, I referred earlier to subsidy of adult children. What we're seeing is parents, it's the unintended consequence of loving your children and wanting them to be happy. If you are not willing to set boundaries and really make them shift from dependence to independence, you're not doing them any favor, because in their 30s and 40s and 50s, they are going to be so worse off than they are in their 20s. And so really what we say is, if your kids are not mastering their financial skills and are intent on staying home, it's time to charge rent. It's time to charge for the use of the car. It's time to charge for food. You know, you've got to get really serious. And most families will say, oh, I don't want them to worry about that. Well, you know, that's the unintended consequence, and it's not a gift. It is enabling them to stay children. And your job as a parent is to help them grow up. And so that's, you know, very quickly, if I can, I'll tell you the story of a mother who sent her 16, this is a true story, sent her 6-year-old son on a Monday off to kindergarten with his lunch money for the week. And he came back, and at the end of the day, and he said, Mom, I had a great day at school. I paid for everybody's lunch. And she said, well, gee, I told you, you had, that had to last all week. And the next day, she only sent him off with an apple. Now, the next day, he made a peanut butter sandwich in order to take to school. This mother exhibited the most courage I have ever seen in a parent. And that's what's required. You cannot just keep fixing things and expect that they're going to learn. They just don't develop any muscle that way. So it's a very hard thing, but for parents who really are serious about helping their kids develop their financial skills, they have to think about the unintended consequence of making them happy.
All right. As an advisor, what should we be learning in order to help our clients the way you are?
You know, I was saying a few minutes ago that the advisors over the next couple of decades who are going to be really helpful to their families are going to have an appreciation for developing human capital in the way they've always developed financial capital. And that means a client comes in and they say to you, well, you know, I'm concerned about my family, my kids, and whatever. And instead of saying, gee, well, let's look at your portfolio, the advisor is increasingly going to say, well, let's look at what your human capital goals are and how we help you develop them. It is the integration of financial and human capital education that will be different for the next generation of advisors.
Well, I'll make a plug for our certified three-dimensional wealth practitioner curriculum. It's online on demand for advisors, and we put that together with a family systems therapist for advisors for exactly that purpose.
Yep.
And so we're incorporating in our practice, have, you know, sort of re-engineered what we do. Now, how about the client? What should the client be looking for in an advisor?
Wow. Well, it's, you know, the opposite. The client who walks in, and if they're not heard, if the advisor is not picking up on what the family mission is, if the advisor is just worried about what's my fee and how am I going to sell you the next product, you want to get out of that room as quickly as possible. Because a good advisor is going to be as concerned about your next generation and the generation after that as they are in that quick fee and the quick transaction. So it's really looking for the advisor who understands relationship as well as they do transaction, or maybe better than. That's, for me, the difference between great and ordinary.
All right. Now, your book, where can we get a hold of it?
Well, you know, Amazon.com and all of the onlines, they all have it. It's easy, and you can get it overnight. Most of the big bookstores carry it, and if you want, you can come to independentmeans.com, and we'll send it to you, too.
I love the front. It's a little kid. He's got a barbell with two pennies as weights on the ends. That's a great picture.
Thanks.
That's a great picture. Now, what about you? What's your vision for your career in this new counseling and financial literacy? What's next when you grow up?
You know, it's so interesting. My company has evolved over the years, and we, as I said, we started really with a focus on kids, and very much like you, we now focus on families. And my quest is really to make sure our company has the tools and the capacity to help families really flourish and become as much as they want to be. So we do more and more want to work with families that are serious, with multi-generations, maybe multiple households. And over time, I want people to say about Independent Means is that's where you go to get help with developing your family's human capital. And that may mean working with financial education. It may mean developing your social and intellectual capital. But we're the stop you make if you're really serious about having a great family, taking your family to the next level.
I'm glad that I met Jolene at the Investment Management Consultants Association in New York City at their annual conference, and Jolene was a speaker. And I'm glad to see that IMCA realizes the value of not just managing money, but managing, you know, what I call total wealth. And I think that's key. In fact, they published an article this couple of months ago that I wrote on three-dimensional alpha.
I remember seeing that.
It's not just financial wealth, but personal, financial, and social. Jolene, listen, I want to thank you. This hour went quickly. And you're doing a great job. Keep at it. I know you've got a conference coming up in Santa Barbara, and you're going to, I call it Brat Boot Camp, but I think it's a lot more.
Thanks.
You're doing a great job. Thanks again. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion. I invite you to join me next week at the same time for more Three-Dimensional Wealth. Thank you.
Voice America Business thanks you for tuning in to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Rory Diefendorf. Please join us again next Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time for more tips and strategies for achieving total wealth management on Three-Dimensional Wealth, right here on Voice America Business, the bottom line in business talk.
The bottom line in business.